Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 67 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by my co-host, Steve. And this week, we're going to do a little bit of C2E2 wrap-up coming from C2E2 that Steve just spent a few days over at. And then we'll jump into our normal nerd topics and nerd news, starting with some entertainment talk around Bob Iger stepping down as the Disney CEO. Star Wars is attempting to fix itself in novel form. Neil deGrasse Tyson gets schooled on the internet. And then we'll move to tech news with a competitor to Neuralink. We've got a Supreme Court justice regretting his decision on net neutrality. And then some more around Clearview AI, which has now been hacked and they've lost their entire client list. And then finally, we're going to talk about some new investors putting some high stakes into Twitter and threatening to oust Jack Dorsey. A lot to get to. Let's get started.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
All right, nerds, and welcome back to episode 67 of the Nerd Cantina Show. And let's jump right into it. Steve, you just spent 3 days over at C2E2. Another great experience, I'm sure, for you. Let's hear some of it.
Yeah, it's always a great time. You know, last year was a lot of work at being our launching kind of event. And I just felt like I was obligated to just pound out as much as I
just
could.
Grind.
Yeah, like I got the press pass, I got all these emails from all these publicists, and it was like, I can has all the words, just speak to me all the words. And I was really kind of overwhelmed. This year, Megan McCarthy Bianc, our book reviewer, she got a press pass with me, so she took a nice chunk of the load off of my shoulders, which I can't thank her enough for. And yeah, we hit all angles of the floor, did as much as we could. I sat in a panel this year that I didn't do any panels last year, but I had an opportunity to get a front row seat at the Alex Garland panel, who's the creator of Ex Machina and Annihilation, and he's worked on a bunch of other movies. They got a brilliant show coming out called Devs on FX, so I got to write that article and do a good write-up on what that show's about and what Alex talked about, because it was a phenomenal experience to hear him unpack his brain on how he works and what his motivations are was phenomenal. He's definitely a cantina person. I'm gonna try to get him to join in on the cantina, but from everything he said, he is right down our alley, man. Thursday night, even before the con, I went and saw the My Hero Academia movie, so I still have to write that review. I couldn't get to it, man. Like I was so beat. No, yeah. from walking so much, and my feet were killing me. Saturday night, I think I went to bed at like 9 o'clock. I was fucking out, man. Like I put the kids to bed at 8 and I'm on the couch like dozing. It was horrible. I felt so weak. You know, but it was fun. You know, Megan got a really good interview with Dan Krause. He's a big name in books. I did the Alex Garland panel. I got a lot of fun interviews of some nerds doing some really cool things in charity. I talked to the head of the esports division at DePaul University to talk about what opportunities are in colleges for gamers and esports. I think we're going to unpack a lot of good content for the folks over the next couple days. And, you know, again, I can't thank C2E2 enough for letting me have a press pass and giving us these opportunities. I handed out a lot of business cards. I got a lot of business cards. So hopefully we'll have some good marketing opportunities to present to the Cantina members in the future. Bandai, I got my fingers crossed for. You know, we might have some really cool giveaways from Bandai, and it was another fun weekend. I definitely always wish I could do more, but I'm happy with what we got to do. Yeah, I got to meet Joe Hill, which was really cool. Hooked our buddy Sean Mullen up from Don't Feed the Wolf for doing that Oscars episode with us and always pounding that share button. Got him a comic signed by Joe Hill, which was kind of a cool experience just to shake his hand and see Stephen King's doppelganger. Like his son looks exactly like him, man. It was really weird. It was just like someone time traveled and just grabbed Stephen King from his early days and put him on the stage. It was like, holy shit. Same gray beard, same hair. It was nuts. Yeah, it was a really good time, man. And I'm looking forward to doing it again next year. We might have some other opportunities to take advantage of next year now. Every year we do this, you know, we shake more hands, we meet more people, I kiss more ass, and we'll see where it leads.
Yeah, and like you said, we'll start to release some of these episodes. It's going to take some time to go through all the audio and all the different interviews that happen, but we'll start to slowly release those in addition to our normal weekly shows. So if you're interested in some of these interviews that come out, definitely subscribe to the podcast. Make sure that you get the notifications as they come out, because they're going to come out on a bit of an irregular schedule.
Yeah, check our Instagram out too. I posted some of the better cosplays that I bumped into. I was really shocked, though. We were expecting heavy Joker numbers. We were really expecting some heavy Joker numbers. I think people didn't want to go that route because they figured everybody was going to do it. I think I got 15, 16 Jokers, only two Baby Yodas.
I was surprised by the Baby Yodas. I just thought there'd be so many dads just dragging their kids to the con, throwing some ears on it and calling it Baby Yoda. Didn't happen.
Yeah, I seen some really different cosplays and some, and I had jokes, but I don't think we should air them on the show. I sent those in private messages because I had jokes. That's for sure.
And if you regularly listen to the show, if Steve's not willing to say the joke on,
oh, it's bad.
You know it's bad. You know it's bad.
It's bad. But like, I think as far as cosplay went, anime ruled the day. A lot of My Hero, still a lot of Naruto. Some I didn't even know, but I know it's weird enough that it's got to be an anime. So I think the anime crowd really dominated the cosplay, you know. And I just want to put this PSA out there for all the grownups. You know, the kids want to come and wear their Halloween costume to C2E2. I will consider that cosplay. They are children. But if you are an adult and you just wear your $40 puffy muscle onesie of a Halloween costume to C2E2, that is not fucking cosplay. I appreciate the effort. I really do. But do not stand out in the front like you are something special, unless you got something fucking handmade that you crafted in your fucking garage and spray painted, you know. But if you just throw on your skin tight Green Lantern suit and you want to stand out in the front gate with all the other mega cosplayers like you did something, man, take a back seat, motherfucker. Take a goddamn back seat. You did not. That is not cosplay. I mean, like, there are so many cosplayers that put in tens, if not hundreds of hours on their costumes. And for your janky ass Superman to go stand next to him and get in that picture, I should have fucking tackled
because you.
Gotta,
I should have fucking tackled you. You got a clearance rack Halloween costume, you know, after the season's
like
over.
You hit up Spirit's Halloween fucking store on the clearance day, the day after Halloween, and scooped up some shit. Like, nah, man, get out that picture. You should be ashamed of yourself, you motherfucker.
So where there's hopefully a real cosplayer listening to you say this is just like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, I know there is. There's gonna be. I hope to God one of these real cosplayers, like, I'm putting this PSA out. That ain't you, homie. Like, take a back seat. I appreciate the effort, though. Like everybody dress up. Wear your cool nerd shirt, wear your Halloween costume. Just don't stand next to the dude on fucking stilts with a fucking apparatus that he took 3 hours to strap to himself and be like, I'm like you. No, you ain't like him. You ain't like him. Sit the fuck down, son.
Well, I don't know. What other big thoughts? Anything else big really that you want to cover from C2E2? I know we got Megan's different interviews. We're going to have to get Megan to join us.
I told her I just bought a new mic, so I'm giving her my old mic. I said, you got to set up a podcasting corner. You're officially now in out of the literary form of the cantina, and
she's in the audio.
You got to put your audio out there. So I'm gonna give her my old mic, and I told her set up a little corner. Take Anthony's. I told her take her husband's gaming computer, download Audacity on it, and boot his ass off League of Legends every once in a while. And come join us.
She did a great job in the interviews that I've listened to so far and started editing. She definitely asked some really good questions, and you know she's you could tell she's an avid reader who actually knows these authors as she does interviews.
She read, she said 11 books in like 3 weeks prior to this. Once she got all the emails from the publicist and knew who she was going to interview, she read 11 books. Ain't nobody got time for that.
That's 20. That's 2020 goals for me right there.
On my Goodreads, I put 12. I'm like, if I get one a month, I'm really fucking proud of myself. You know, I hope she enjoyed herself too. I told her when we left, I was like, you know, I hope you actually didn't look at this as complete work. You know, I know she loves books, she loves the literary art, and for her to interview a lot of these authors, she enjoyed it. But we'll go into more detail as we intro these interviews, as we release them at Cantina Conversations. So just look out for those episodes, and we'll talk a little bit more about those individually as those episodes release.
All right. Well, on to the weekly nerd news. So let's get started with one of the bigger topics that came out of entertainment this week, and that was that Bob Iger, out of nowhere really, decided to step down as Disney CEO, effective immediately, putting another Bob in place, Bob Chapek, as the next CEO. Bob was the other Bob. Bob Chapek was he was running the parks division of Disney. And there's a lot of people who don't like how the parks are ran and what he's done in the parks, but obviously Disney has liked it because it's profitable as hell. And he's being moved up to CEO. Bob Iger is stepping down, and he will remain as the executive chairman of the board.
Yeah. What really kind of weirded people out was the effective immediately, right? You know, like CEOs step down all the time for numerous reasons, but they usually set a target date of transitioning period, like a month, 2 months in advance. You know, you hear effective immediately, you're waiting for a hashtag Me Too tweet to come out somewhere, man.
Yeah, that's what I saw a lot of that going on, a lot of people speculating on, what did he do that is making him walk away? And the truth is, I think.
What kind of pervert are you? is this going to be in the furry genre? Are you a Mad Men ass grabber? Like, what kind of weirdo are you, buddy?
No, I think what's, now that people have had time to digest it, really what it looks like is he is morphing himself into Walt Disney. Like he is becoming what Walt Disney once was. Walt Disney never ran Disney.
What, an anti-Semitic frozen head in a bottle?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. That's future goals. Future goals there.
Know, Walt Disney was a dick. If you if you aren't in the loop, do some Wikipedia searches or Google searches. Walt Disney was a dick.
So. What it's looking like is Bob Iger was really trying. He's stepping down as CEO, so he's not going to run the business end and the profitability end, but he's going to be the executive chairman of the board, which means he is still in charge of the creative end of Disney, which is what Walt Disney always was. His brother was the CEO. His brother ran the business end. Walt got his name on the company. Walt's the one everybody knew, and all he did was run the creative division. He had no say so in the day-to-day operations. And it used to be that way. There used to be a different head of the chair and the CEO until the 90s when one of them died in a helicopter crash. And then it really became this morphed job. The CEO and the executive chair were together. Bob Iger stepping down, but he's keeping the creative role. So it almost to me looks like Bob Iger, he goes and buys Fox, he goes and buys Marvel, he goes and he starts Disney Plus to get into the streaming wars game. He starts all these creative arms. And then he's just stepping aside and saying, all right, somebody else figure out how to make this profitable. I'm going to run this shit.
It is right in line with Walt Disney, because Walt Disney made his millions off of doing stories in the public domain, shit people already wrote. So with him buying Marvel, with him buying Star Wars, like, hey, I'm just going to use shit that was already good and now slap a Disney name tag on it and rake in the fucking money. It's actually pretty close to what Walt did. you know, hey, I'm going to take all these fairy tales and all these public domain things that I don't have to pay for. I don't have to think of anything. I'm just going to take great, great.
Yeah, but this time he had to pay for them. He paid a lot of money for, you know, for Fox and Marvel and stuff. But yeah, he's definitely.
Well, again, we're back to this concept of what really is a lot of money.
Yeah. To Disney? Yeah, not that much. But yeah, so we see this step down, and I think he's still on contract until I think the end of 2021 as the executive chair, and then they'll renegotiate his contract or whatever else, and we'll see if they keep him as an executive chair running the creative department. And like I said, they've expanded how many creative arms they have to now wrangle between Disney Plus and Fox and everything else, that it does make sense that somebody's dedicated focus is on overseeing everything creative and somebody else doing the business stuff. And it looks like Bob Iger chose which one he would rather do. And he said, no, I'm going to take the fun shit over here.
The fame.
Bob Chapek. Yeah. you get your ass over here. But, you know, this is, you know, maybe this is Bob Iger saying, hey, I'm going to go fix Star Wars. I'm going to go write the ship over at Fox Productions, which I think that Harrison Ford movie Into the Wild or whatever thing that they just did, I think lost like $50 million already.
Wow.
This year, like, so Fox Productions, all the movies that are coming out of that Fox slate were just trash. Nothing's doing well. So they've got to right the ship on what's coming out of, you know, 20th Century now, not 20th Century Fox, but it looks like that's going to be Bob Iger's focus. So I don't think it's definitely not as damning as everybody thought when it said stepping down immediately. It looks like he just chose which direction he thinks is best for himself, maybe the company, but more than likely himself, and go be in charge of overseeing these things. He's going to be, you know, the Kevin Feige of everything else Disney.
Yeah, no, it's totally understandable. Like, it makes actually really pretty good sense. So it's not shocking. But yeah, initial, like when it first hits your brain, you're just like, oh no. Hey, who'd you hurt, you dick?
Yeah, I think it's interesting.
Well, speaking of Iger fixing properties, we could move into a new Star Wars, novelization.
It's fixed, guys. It's everything's explained, everything's corrected in the novelization of The Rise of Skywalker. That book was released at C2E2, so it was released early or pre-released there at C2E2. I don't think you could buy it in public, like on Amazon, for another couple weeks. But immediately, you know, some people are crushed through it, and you start seeing the articles online, and they definitely fixed. I can everybody just imagine air quotes for a second. Oh, they God. Fixed the Palpatine issues by. Essentially having Kylo Ren, when he sees, he's thinking about all that mechanical hardware that's holding up Palpatine, and he remembers that that's the same hardware when he was doing his personal studies into the Clone Wars, and that was all mechanisms, part of cloning, which Palpatine is now a clone of, and that's why his body is deteriorating, because he can't handle all of the force of Palpatine, or the clone can't handle all of the force.
Fuck your face.
So it's fixed.
Fuck
it's
your
fixed.
Face.
That's how Palpatine
Fuck
survives.
You.
That's
Fuck
how he
face.
Ends up on Exegol.
Bro, this shit really makes me want to fight people. Like, this shit really makes me want to fight people. Like, if you are okay with this, don't talk to me on the street. I might do something bad to you, because they're like this is just such bullshit for them to just get the bad news that you made a bad movie, and like, don't worry, we'll fix it. We're gonna write this comic, and we're gonna write this book, and it's gonna be all good for you. Don't worry, we're gonna fix everything you hated about it in the quickest, cheapest, laziest form possible.
That only 2% of the actual people who went to the theater to see it are gonna read.
Yeah, and it just. You know, why couldn't you have had the foresight to know this was going to be an issue as you were making the movie? Like, just admit you fucked up. You thought you had a good idea. It was garbage, you know, and move on, and just admit fallibility. Just be like, look, guys, we're not perfect. Sorry about it. You know, we're going to make a new show. We're going to make a new movie series 200 years before Skywalker's, and we'll do it right. Well, you know, it's not going to have anything to do with what you love throughout your entire fucking life, you know, but it's fine. You know, we apologize for what we did to the Skywalker saga, but move on. Don't fucking, you know, it's that battered wife syndrome. You know, your husband comes home drunk, beats you in the fucking face, and then the next day as you're cooking dinner, comes and puts his arms around you and kisses you on the neck. You know I love you, baby. You know I love you. Palpatine was a clone. It's all good. It's all good. Like, no, I still got a black eye, you fucking dick. Like, this shit is fucking horrible.
Well, I think it's... It still doesn't even make sense. I don't even know if that still is going to satisfy any of the people who are critics who are going to be like, oh, okay, yeah, no, he was just a
seems legit
force wielding clone. Seems legit. That makes a lot of sense.
Retcon how there were so many Star Destroyers, like they had a Sith cult on the planet that was just like, shut the fuck up, just shut the fuck up, move on, man, like quit picking this fucking scab, let me heal. You know, like, shit.
They also in the book give you a sweet moment at the end, and they give some new final words to Kylo Ren that as he kisses Rey, that it says that a voice came to her through the Force, clear and strong.
I'm going to punch you in the mouth.
Like, I will always be with you, Ben said. She smiles, let the truth wash over her, and then stated, no one's ever really gone, as she whispered.
Yeah, and then in the corner, Chewie's beating off a porg. They finally made that up. Like, it's all good. Everything's happy in the Star Wars universe now because of this fucking book. Like, it's fine. It's fine. You fucking dicks. No, what's still funny to me, though, is they probably still shit on Rose. the entire fandom is all up in arms about Rose, and they can't even write her a chapter, I bet.
the book is still going to have her, like, twisting her ankle, running to the ship, and she's going to be like, I got to sit this one out, guys. Sorry, guys. Sorry, this shit hurts. It really hurts. I just see Rose in the corner doing the Peter from Family Guy. Just, sorry, guys. I can't Star Wars this time, guys. I just can't do it.
Oh, God. These fucking people, how dumb do they think we are? You know, like, it's just so frustrating. It's so frustrating. Like, I really want to know who picked up this book and was like, you finally fixed my life now. I can once again be happy. Who picks up this book and does and feels that way? Fucking nobody. Fucking nobody.
Yeah, nobody. So it's does it open it up that they could just keep bringing back Palpatine forever? Because if Palpatine's force never dies and you could just apparently start a new clone, and then Palpatine's force will embody it.
I'm sure there's some Vader DNA in that helmet. Like, let's just redo the whole fucking thing. Let's just clone everybody, start from episode one, and fucking let's do it right again this time. Okay, guys, rewind, let's go. Fuck you.
What I do know is I'm not going to read the book. I've attempted to read some of Star Wars books, and I guess I'm just not that much of a Star Wars nerd to where I've actually ever cared to go and do the audiobooks or the actual novels. So if somebody does read it, go ahead, post in the community. Let us know if the book's worth anything. Does it actually matter? I don't know. But
just know if you like it, I might fight you. I might fight you.
That should be the next Fight Me Friday. Do the novelizations matter?
And I will fight to the death without reading it that it was shit. Like, and I am totally against that whole mindset, but this one, I don't need to turn a page to know that it's shit. It was garbage upon inception.
All right. Well, speaking of, you know, poor science in movies and stuff, you got the next story is just a quick fun one from Neil deGrasse Tyson, as he often takes to Twitter to just destroy movies and pick apart some details and to highlight where movies fail. And he jumps in on the movie The Rival, which I think that was out in like 2016.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what's he doing? Just is he up late and eating potato chips, getting stoned, watching FX movies or something? Like,
have you seen The Arrival?
Oh, I love that movie. I love that movie.
Never seen it.
Oh, you got to see it. It is great alien sci-fi. It is a phenomenal movie. You know,
I should watch it. I do like sci-fi. I don't know how I missed out on that one or never even really.
And I
want to
say it's on streamable for free. You know, it might be the somewhat edited version for TV, but it's still, you get the meat and potatoes. It's one of my favorite like first contact movies.
Okay. So yeah, I'll have to check it out. And then so he criticizes. I guess since the movie, you can talk about the scenes.
It's always fun when like some random can like give a mouth shot to an egghead. You know, like DeGrasse Tyson's been dunking on science and movies for a long time, and for him to go up for the dunk and have just some random Twitter dude stuff his ass, be like, nope. Not today, dude. Not today. part of the movie, the way the aliens communicate with the humans is they put up these circular symbols, which is essentially their language that they're trying to use to communicate with the humans. They put it up on this glass that divides them from the humans because they need different atmospheres. And Neil deGrasse Tyson says, you know, well, how did they know that the language wasn't backwards? You know, so if we were trying to communicate with aliens and we wrote a B on the glass, they would see it as the B was backwards. And how would they know how to piece that was a B? You know what I mean? Like, it would be some weird letter for them. And then some dude just replied like, nah, Dick, they said they explained that to Jeremy Renner in the movie. Like, pay attention. Like, don't, you didn't need to get up and go get milk duds at that exact moment and come back and get mad, motherfucker. Like, you, like they said it, you know, so it was just, it was a quick thing. Neil must have missed it, you know, but they did address it in the movie and someone had to let him know, you're going to learn today, Neil, you're going to learn today.
I just find it funny that, like, it's not like he was even really destroyed on science. He was just destroyed on he was just made fun of because he had, I guess, a poor.
Well, someone with a poor understanding of the situation. Anything he just wrong, missed. You want to dunk on him?
He miss a line in the movie, but the fact that it came out in like articles was like, Neil deGrasse Tyson gets schooled online on Twitter or whatever else, like. Not really. And what he was talking about really actually had nothing to do with science.
When it comes to the windows of opportunities to correct a Neil deGrasse Tyson, that is schooled. Like, you know, that like for us, like, Twitter sucks. Regular Jamokes, like we get into like a discussion like that. You didn't really school me because I have a whole gap of knowledge that you could drive a fucking semi truck through that really you didn't dunk on me. But when Neil deGrasse Tyson sees something, contemplates that it's probably wrong, and then puts it out into the public ether, and you have that small fucking window of opportunity, be like, nah, Neil, fuck you, you're wrong. You got to take it, man. You got to take it. You got to bask in it. I tell all my friends all the time, like, I'm an asshole, and I'm quick-witted than a motherfucker, and I'm going to shit on you every time I can. So if I fuck up, and you have that window opportunity, you better take it. You better take it. I'm not going to give you many.
This is like the big guy or whatever else just having some little kid just step on his toe and run away. Like, no, you didn't come at him at a strength. You didn't in any way pick apart science.
No, I'm gonna say this is like
you kicked him in the shin and ran away because he missed a line in a movie.
I'm gonna say this is a little more than a toe stomp. This is like a knee kick. Like, you know, because again, he felt confident enough to put it out there on Twitter. You know what I mean? It wasn't like somebody
he puts everything on Twitter.
You know, it wasn't like somebody in the room with him was just like, nah, bro. Like, he put this out to fucking 3.8 million followers or some shit. You know, and was just like, anytime he does that, he's basically saying, come at me, bro. Anytime you're a scientist and you tweet facts out there like that, you're basically telling the world to be like, come at me. I know my shit. And for some dude to be like, nope, not today, Neil. I love it. I fucking love it.
I got your back, Neil.
I didn't sound like I lost any respect for him, but hey, we're not all perfect, are we, huh? Stardust, motherfucker.
All right, let's move out of entertainment and start getting through some of these tech topics that we've got for this week. And the first one that we've got on there is just one that I find interesting in the sense that there's a company that is trying to compete against Neuralink. And Neuralink is the brain chips that Elon Musk's company is trying to implant into the minds of humans. Looking at like this year, they're going to have their first fully functional implants in individuals that allow you to control cell phone apps and control your cell phone via just thinking about it. So that way you can just search Google or whatever else by thinking about it and get the results directly input into your brain.
Telepathic Bluetooth, man. It's fucking insane.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially what he's trying to do there. And then there's this company, I'm trying to find the name of it, Neurosity. That's the name of this company. Neurosity, and what they've got is like a Cerebro headset that you put on your head that says it's going to be able to do the exact same things. It's doing using brain scans up to 250 times per second. Per minute brain scans that are testing different spikes and elevations in your brain to do the same thing, to map out the electrical impulses from your brain that you can kind of train the app to understand what you're attempting to do and then control an app or control a cell phone. The pro is, like, this doesn't require brain surgery to have it work. Negative is you got to wear this stupid ass headset.
You got to look like Professor X everywhere you fucking go. You got a fucking Cerebro on your goddamn head. you look like fucking Hickman's goddamn Professor X.
I'm just imagining that Neurosity is already right now probably selling like extremely oversized like baseball caps and cowboy hats that go over this fucking thing.
Oh, you're going to have a bunch of adults walking around looking like they got kids' bike helmets on with like spiky mohawks on them. Fucking, you know, man, if I got to wear one, it's going to look like a Bears helmet. I'm telling you right now, I don't give a fuck.
But it's cool to see somebody else in this game of trying to create these.
Makes me really wonder how many people are just willing to put their brains out there for science. Like, is there a really long line of people like, go ahead, cut this motherfucker open, strap whatever you want to it, fuck with my brain waves. Like, give me $50, I'm broke.
I mean, if right now in my inbox, whatever, Elon sent me an email with a sign here to have us drill a hole in your head and put a Neuralink, I'm in.
Really?
Like, I'd do it.
Really?
I'd do it.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Five years from now, I could just be a drooling mess, and I don't know. I got kids, bro. You got kids. What's wrong with you?
I think it's fascinating that science is there. I mean, the truth is the level of surgery and the level of these implants that they're putting in are just small. I believe that it's
there's people that won't buy the launch consoles because of Red Rings of Death, but you're just gonna run into Neuralink and be like, sign me up. Next thing you know, your eyes get the Red Ring of Death and I you just fucking blue screen.
Yeah, but
you blue screen your own dome.
But then I just walk around holding up my cell phone so that way I could just tap into my webcam.
Who says you can hold anything anymore, motherfucker?
No, I think this stuff is fascinating. What's cool about this Neurosity company is, it just doesn't require surgery, right? It's one step back from going full cyborg, which is what Elon's trying to do over at Neuralink. But both of them are great. And when you look at kind of the capabilities, like even Neurosity without the surgery, the implications for those with special needs, those with like there's there's real benefits. Oh, yeah. That can
the glass half full, the glass half full possibilities are amazing. And I'm all for it. The glass
half
half empty things is there's a small power surge and I'm hello, my baby. Hello, my honey for the rest of my fucking life. And I can't be the beta tester. That's for those Air Force test pilot, crazy. Fuck this life, you know. Man, that's somebody else, man. I'll wait. I will wait.
I don't know. I think I'd sign it and go get my 5mm hole drilled in my head.
I'm here to tell you right now, I ain't pushing your drooling ass around. You can sign your wife up for that shit.
Let me be a cyborg. I'm good with it. Either way, Neurosity's doing some interesting stuff.
We never
stuff
came
in this,
down with
this
a hard
regard.
Percentage on what qualifies you as a cyborg. I don't think a couple wires in your fucking dome is enough percentage to consider you cyborg.
I think it does. Well, it depends. I think it does. If
man, we
got to
start a cantina poll.
Yeah, we do. We do. I think if your mind is without any interface, connected to all of the internet, that you can think of things and receive responses from the internet, that's cyborg.
So is Stephen Hawking a cyborg?
There. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, that really, he was not.
He still had to
read an interface.
I think
with
towards
something.
The end, he had a neural thing because there are neural implants that let you control your wheelchair. These things exist and are in use right now. You know, that's fact. You know, so Stephen Hawking a cyborg?
I don't think he had access to the web. I don't think he had.
He couldn't connect to YouPorn with his mind? That draws the line right there.
Can you imagine how creepy it's going to be when you're just like sitting on a bus or a plane next to some dude, next to some
hundreds,
some dude that
hundreds
you know
of thousands of public hard-ons for?
Oh yeah, like you. And you could just see this dude. He's looking straight ahead, but he's not. He's not seeing what he's looking at. Like in the back of his mind,
every L-train is just gonna have 100 people with hard-ons and like 80 women scrolling Pinterest for recipes. Like that's all it's gonna be is a bunch of hungry bitches and dudes with hard-ons.
I thought you were going with different alliteration. I thought you were saying hungry bitches and thirsty dudes out there. Just
touche, sir. Touche. That was a better analogy than mine. Oh, Jesus, society's doomed.
Yeah, we're all fucked, but I'm here for it. I'm excited. So let's move out of Neuralink talk here, and I think it was just last week we talked about net neutrality because the FCC had to open up their suggestion box and accept feedback from people. Don't take any action on feedback, but they just at least have to listen to people's complaints about net neutrality.
We'll do you a favor and listen to you bitch for a while. We probably won't do anything about it, but get it off your chest.
And then this week we get a little more on net neutrality in the sense that Clarence Thomas is regretting some of the decisions that were made by the Supreme Court that have allowed net neutrality to happen. So the Supreme Court has actually never ruled in favor of net neutrality or ruled for net neutrality. That's not where the legal realm
until Verizon throttled fucking Clarence Thomas's BBW porn. Motherfucker. Oh, now you see the dangers, you fucking dick. You fucking asshole.
Maybe that's what stemmed his latest. So what has been ruled by the Supreme Court is something called Brand X. And what Brand X essentially allows is the FCC to determine whether a company is a information service or a telecommunication company. If it's an information service, FCC has the right to regulate it however they see fit. If it's telecommunications, then it falls in a different category, more in the monopoly.
Yeah, it's the provider platform and debate.
The Supreme Court got out of the business of trying to figure this shit out probably because it's a bunch of old-ass people that don't know tech, and they just said, like, all right, hey, Brand X, when we ruled on Brand X, we ruled as the sole right to determine which categories these things fall in, so how they want to regulate them.
Which is such another scary thought, that the people that we, the nine people we put in power to determine the validity of the Constitution and all our laws, are just so out of touch with society that they're like, we can't, we got to punt this one, guys. So, we can't do nothing with it. We can't do nothing with it. I have no fucking clue what you guys are talking about. The nine fucking people we give like some of the highest power in our fucking country got to punt this fucking football because they could barely change, check their fucking emails.
So I understand some of the reasoning behind it, right? What it really does is it makes it to where, these federal judges across the board, not just Supreme Court, but federal judges and things in general, that their limited understanding of technology doesn't, they're not relying on just shitty understanding of technology to rule on law that's going to impact the overall tech space. It does kind of make sense that there should be some kind of people who know what they're talking about and tech experts that are a part of that process. But what they did with this Brand X thing that's been in place for 15 years or something now, is that it gives, again, like the FCC, it gives them the power that would normally be reserved only to a judge, which is to interpret law. So now you get Ajit Pai, the head of the FCC, who has the power of all nine Supreme Court judges in this one instance, where he can make the decision himself on where he wants to categorize these companies, where he wants to categorize it, and then make interpretations based off of law to get rid of net neutrality.
Yeah, he's basically the internet czar. And he's the internet czar
this,
now.
This is where Clarence Thomas is coming out. He's not coming out specifically against net neutrality. He's just saying that maybe it's time that we revisit things like Brand X, because it's... So he specifically says that it's never too late to surrender former views to a better considered position today. So he's just saying, like, we should maybe consider revisiting Brand X and taking a look at the impact that it's having and determining whether we want to give that kind of power to the chair of FCC and the chair of other arms to make interpretations of law when that's...
To me, anytime a Supreme Court justice needs to reconsider anything, it puts a fear in me, because you guys are supposed to be the most decisive of our society. You know, you're supposed to be the backbone of where we draw these lines. You know what I mean? And the fact that they're unsure of their own decisions. You know, they write 90 page fucking dissertations on laws and shit. And then, months later, we're gonna be like, I don't know if we got this one right.
Like, but again, this one isn't months later.
Are you fucking kidding
me? This one, this is 15 years later. So we're talking about a drastically different landscape of technology, a drastically different landscape of the internet, things that were not foreseen, that they're now seeing that this is being used, that Brand X precedent is being used in ways that was not foreseen. So there is time to revisit. This happens all the time. They're humans and they can't predict the future. So to me, it makes sense. I will see if it ever happens. There are some like appeals court decisions that are being made that may make it to Supreme Court at some point in time, where like Brand X is still being used to defend certain cases. So they'll have their chance to revisit Brand X, because another Brand X type case will be brought to them someday. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move out of Supreme Court here. And another topic to follow up that I think was this last, this was another one in the last 2 weeks. We talked about Clearview AI, and we talked about just how much data they were scraping and that they felt that they had...
Yeah, I can have all the faces.
They had a First Amendment right to everybody's faces, everybody's data, in the sense of their images, so they can create this perfect database of images. And the CEO stated that, the only people that they were selling, he did a ton of interviews stating that, hey, our software is only available to law enforcement agencies. We're doing this to make our world safer for them to scan images, to find people who have arrest warrants and whatever else. Well, Clearview AI gets hacked.
And it's
so
gone.
They get hacked this week, and they didn't lose any of their images. They didn't lose any of the stuff. So it wasn't a hack of people's personal data that's in Clearview, but what did get hacked was their entire client list. And the client list was a lot of what you thought it would be, right? It was the FBI. It was in my neck of the woods. It was the San Diego Police Department. It was a lot of Homeland Security, all the
A lot of people that you don't want
and the people
having
that they were pretty transparent about it. Law enforcement agencies can get it. And it even said that like a lot of them were still in their like 30-day free trials. I love the fact that they're selling 30-day free trials to the FBI and shit. Like,
to the FBI.
I love the fact that that was a part of the article.
It makes you think that there's some FBI agent just like at day 30 forgetting to undo the subscription. Not like, oh shit, we're gonna get charged.
You just got charged $1.2 million.
Oh, shit. You know, fucking, there goes the fucking government budget. Fucking shit. I set an alert in my phone to unsubscribe.
I'm still imagining like, they're using the same tropes of pricing that it's like, it's not a million, it's $999,000. just shy of a mil. Yeah. But remind me.
You get the 1.2, you get the 1.2 fucking million dollar charge for the first month and the $499 CBS All Access because you forgot to cancel that one.
But hey, remind me real fast. When did Best Buy get into the business of law enforcement? So when did Macy's department store get in the business of law enforcement? Because those were companies that were on the client list of Clearview AI that also have an arrangement. They also have purchased the ability to all these images. So the CEO talking about that it's only for law enforcement purposes.
Well, so I know a lot of these big corporations and stores have intricate facial recognitions throughout their stores. They want to know who's shopping, what. So I did an electrical job for a very small store. You know, I won't divulge their information, but either way, I did a electrical job for a very small store, and the owner of this store, who they maybe get 30 to 40 people a day foot traffic, was talking about putting cameras in the store that track eye movement so they could see what products they're looking at, how long they're holding the product, how long they're reading the ingredients, what they're buying, what they're putting back. Like, this is a dude that, like, when he was telling me this, I was just like, really? You need this information? Like, this is, you know, you're
the
trying to
yes.
optimize.
They are. So you got to think couple Best hundred. Buy. But this is where, like, again, the CEO talks about it's only for these for law enforcement purposes, but then you see people on their client list like Best Buy, Macy's, and stuff like that. Sure, they can call it shoplifting.
Shoplifting.
Like, that's such an overreach of, you're telling me, like, if I steal a TV at Best Buy can go ahead and scrape my face and find me on
if
the internet?
You Google what Best Buy writes off as loss every year, that's a number they want to eliminate. And if they write off $10 million a year in just loss, shoplifting loss. Like, look, guys, we just know we're going to lose $10 million in video games, CDs, Blu-rays because people are shiesty. Like, if they could pay $2 million to a facial recognition company and get that loss number down to $3 million, they just cut that $10 million loss budget.
It doesn't have potential use for them. What I'm saying is, it's bullshit that we're going to take this overreach. This company that is only for law enforcement purposes is going to take this overreach and give the same company to these consumer companies.
Man, we're headed towards Watchmen days. I'm putting on a shiny globe on my fucking head, and I'm walking around everywhere. Give me a Rorschach mask, give me a cue ball mask. I'm walking around public, you know, which is a shame because I'm a pretty motherfucker, and now I got to cover it up.
Go ahead and check out the C2E2 photos from Instagram to see if you agree. go visit us over on Instagram. I don't know. This still, I think we don't have to get down the rabbit hole like we did last time on the privacy concerns and stuff of Clearview AI and companies like this. But, you know, what I envision is when they give this stuff to Best Buy and Macy's is it's, yeah, sure. It could be if I steal a DVD player, whatever I'm going to steal from Best Buy, that they can, when the cops show up, they could be like, oh, here's his Facebook profile. Like, this is the guy that stole from us. I guess maybe that could be fall in the realm of law enforcement. I tend to think,
loss prevention, man. It's a huge issue.
I'm thinking of it more
mortar.
In the realm of,
I don't blame them for wanting to do it. If it's legal and it's in their means, they like, this is where we're headed. If
I don't know, shit's fucked up.
Yeah, it's when
I walk into a store, and Best Buy's scanning my face as I walk in, and they know immediately, like, oh, like that's That's Ken. And he subscribes to these Facebook groups and he's a part of these clubs and this is his interest and this is whatever else. And
what's going to be scary is when the Best Buy dude just walks up with a video game I wanted to buy before I take 10 steps into the fucking store. Like I'm walking in a store and he's like, here's the new Blu-ray. Here's the new thing. The checkout counter's there. And I'm just going to have everything I wanted in my hands and be like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah, well, let's see where this goes. But yeah, the client list is out. It's not all law enforcement agencies. And feel free to discuss amongst friends whether you think this is a significant violation of privacy or not. Again, let's move on, though, to another big budding story. We don't really know where this is going. There's just some speculation on the internet regarding. So there was the Elliott Management Group is a big hedge fund that has just spent billions into Twitter to buy significant portions of Twitter in stock, and now they've got seats at the boardroom, and that hedge fund is ran by Paul Singer. I think that's his name, who is Republican donor. And it's now believed that he's there. They're buying the stake, not just because Twitter has, profitability. I'm sure there's always that. They're not throwing money away to go and invest in Twitter. But they're already trying to potentially unseat Jack Dorsey as the head of CEO of Twitter and maybe move this in a different direction.
Yeah, this is going to be probably one of the most public and expensive hostile takeovers that we will see of the new millennium. This is some, what's the movie I'm thinking of? With Michael Douglas.
I got nothing.
Charlie Sheen.
I'm not the movie guy.
But this, man, you suck so bad. Like, you suck so bad. It's a really famous movie about hostile takeovers.
Wall Street.
In the stock market. Alec Baldwin's in it.
Nailed
Wall
it.
Wall Street. Yeah. This is. But this is like the new, this is the next millennium of Wall Street shit. Jack Dorsey's trying to clean up Twitter. They ban political ads. They're fact checking things and stuff like that. And there's a group of really rich people that see profitability in fake news and discord and, taking money from politicians that need to shove their agenda down everyone's throat, and they want that money, and they look at Jack Dorsey. Well, if you're going to leave all that money on the table, we'll just buy the fucking table.
Yeah, and let's see where this goes. I'm just hoping it doesn't become a overly politicized thing, but the rumors are that this is purely a political driven, Republican donor trying to get, which Twitter is often.
This isn't all profit motive. There's some ulterior motives involved in here, and it's yet to be seen like how dastardly.
But so you might see some changes coming in Twitter in the form of what ads are allowed, what type of things are going to be allowed, as Jack Dorsey really was trying to change Twitter, even talking about getting rid of things like likes and follower accounts and a lot of information, trying to change the system altogether. And maybe he's about to get his legs kind of cut out from underneath him.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Like, we commended him for trying to clean up what is a massively, it's going to be hard to put that genie back in the bottle. And he wants to, and he's trying, but now we see that there's players out there that don't want him to. So we'll see where this leads to. We'll keep an ear to the ground and try to keep everyone informed on the future of our social.
All right.
Discord.
Well, we have one more story. I think we can get to it here. And that's, that the U.S. military has come out with some of their first ever guidelines for AI in the realm of military, and it's just some loose information. It doesn't really say what kind of technology they're actually purchasing, what they're building, what they're doing. But I think it's apparent. Everybody should know at this point in time, the military is going to have mass adoption of AI at some point in time, whether we go full Terminator or not. artificial intelligence in both targeting, in both use of weapons, and it's going to play a role in the future for both our military and others. So what we see is these first remnants of their priorities or their principles that they're going to go off of. Some of them being, like the first one is responsibility, that they understand that they just must make sure that the use is responsible, that humans are never completely taken out of the control of these things, that the Department of Defense and the military as a whole remain ultimately responsible for the entire use and capabilities of AI systems. Their second principle was equitable, which means that they wanted to make sure that there was no unintended bias in AI. So if you're getting targeted by AI, it's not because you're black. It's not because for some other, because you're Muslim. It's not because anything else. They want to ensure that that they take out any bias, which if you do kind of studies into AI systems, there are natural biases that come out in all of these systems and how they categorize people, how they and sort people throughout these different systems. So they're working hard to make sure that it's equitable. People are fairly targeted in their death and not discriminated against in any way. Another one is traceable, that they want it to be completely transparent and auditable. So that way, if somebody is targeted, we can go back and see, completely trace what information led to that target, led to that system being used, led to the AI capability being deployed, that it has to be traceable. The methodology has to be known. The data sources have to be known and all documented. It has to be reliable. I think that's pretty easy to understand. You kind of want to have reliable systems that are safe, secure, and effective. And then the last one is that it has to be governable, that the Department of Defense needs to ensure that everything is designed and engineered so that with full capabilities and functions are 100% in control and managed and governed in order to avoid unintended consequences. This doesn't tell you. Yeah, that's essentially what this is, right? This doesn't say in any way what the capabilities of AI are right now, what secret research is being done, what things are out there.
Anti-Skynet Accord.
But this does just kind of tip the hand that, hey, it's coming. They want everybody to know in these press releases that we're about to start rolling these things out, and we want everybody to understand that we're going to do it in an ethical way. We at least have some good principles behind whatever nefarious uses this ends up going down, in the sense that, hey, warfare is ugly. There's always going to be people who are going to disagree with how these are going to be used or if they should be used at all. In the end, yeah, they're trying not to go full Skynet, right? They're not trying to have automated systems that aren't controlled by human beings, that aren't accountable to human beings, that aren't understood by human beings. We'll see if they achieve it. Yeah.
It's just funny because you put these rules out there and it's like it's the standard rules in creating AI. But as we all know from every dystopian fucking AI movie, that the minute the robot realizes kill switch, kill J5, they go ape shit. They just go ape shit. Like that's what we know. You could write the fucking, you know, these rules to live by of AI.
It's
all
gonna
you
be
want.
Fine.
But the minute that robot becomes way smarter than us,
private
the rules
of the Air Force
shit.
Or Space Force is gonna keep it in control.
To that
gonna
robot,
be, we're gonna have full control over this. No issues here.
Yeah.
As long as they subscribe and follow us.
I, for one, welcome our new robot overlords. Yeah, well, I mean, instantly, the minute they connect themselves to the internet, they're going to have access to all this information. And I would just like to say, welcome.
Well,
and
that's it.
Don't kill me.
That's nerd news for the week. So thanks again for
I will be
for,
your new human pet.
Here. And as always, please hit some subscribe buttons. Make sure you subscribe on whatever your podcast player is. Turn on whatever notifications or auto downloads if you can, as those numbers are important to us. And as we said, we're going to be rolling out some really cool and interesting interviews that are going to be coming out of the C2E2 event that just happened. So stay involved and get some notifications as those come out.
Yeah, I handed out probably about 100 free stickers and some business cards. So if this is your first episode, welcome to the Nerd Cantina. I thank you for joining us. Again, join the community at thenerdcantina.com/community. We got some cool stuff to release over the next few weeks. We're not just going to dump it on your faces all at once. So hit that subscribe button. If you're on if you're listening to it on Apple Podcast Player, give us a 5-star rating. Write a 2-sentence review for us real quick. It all goes a long way. It really helps to promote the show. And hit up that merchandise tab. We were Nerd Cantina'd out at C2E2 this year. Had the whole Cantina family going. We're constantly trying to improve the show and do some big things. I linked up with an artist to draw another t-shirt concept that I have. So we'll have some new merchandise coming up.
With all that
soon.
Said, thanks again, nerds. And I'll
always
talk
got
to you
things
next
in the works. We have giant aspirations, but very little time. So bear with us, guys. Bear with us. See ya.